Thank you for listening to Radioactive Radio. I'm your host, Mike Nichols, and on today's show, we're going to have a global warming corner by Dave Mitchell. And in the studio today, we have Greg Schwartz talking about the singing of God Bless America during the baseball games. Also in the studio today is we got Doug Greer.
Hello.
Hello, this is Greg.
Yep. Greg and Doug, thank you guys for coming in. And to kick off the show, I'm going to start off with the David Mitchell's Global Warming Corner. So here we go. Hold on one moment. I have a little technical difficulty here.
This is Dave Mitchell with Global Warming Corner, brought to you by 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. On September 9, 2014, Global Warming Corner focused on the People's Climate March on September 21, 2014. Bill McKibben, the founder of 350.org, in May of 2014, pointed to the People's Climate March as an opportunity for those who cared about the planet to stand up and be counted. In his Rolling Stone article, Bill McKibben said, quote, "This is a dead serious business, a signal moment in the gathering fight of human beings to do something about global warming before it's too late to do anything but watch." The UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon scheduled a meeting of world and business leaders on September 23, 2014, in New York City, with a direct focus on committing to serious emissions cuts. This meeting was set by Ban Ki-moon. With his knowledge, the odds of an international treaty developing in Paris in December 2015 were low, given the current political dynamic. The myriad organizers of the People's Climate March were hoping for 100,000 to attend. Maybe to most everyone's amazement, a huge crowd materialized, with estimates ranging from 300,000 to 400,000. The September 21 New York Times coverage indicated an estimated crowd of 311,000. Regardless of the size, the crowd was enormous. So large, the entire 2.2-mile route was not long enough to hold the entirety. People from everywhere came for this historic march, the largest environmental climate demonstration to date. Some came from international locations, and myriads of groups were represented. Indigenous groups were given the honor of leading the march, and a panoply of various organizations participated. This rider made the trip to New York City on a bus originating in Wichita, Kansas. Hundreds of buses from around the U.S. made the trip to this historic march, with numerous environmental organizations providing financial assistance. Most encouraging was to see the high numbers of college students and those in their 20s at the march. Not only their presence, but the passion and creativity brought by them was truly inspiring. A group of young people connected with Amnesty International were very close to this writer, who could not help but be moved by their leader's chants as we marched. All age ranges were present, ranging from the elderly to families with children. Despite the nearly three-hour delay in getting started, the crowd remained quite patient and accepting of each other. Created banners and signs were everywhere, with the vast majority of us having some sign or button to display. Sometime during the march, I met a woman in her 60s who had begun a hike across the country with a group originating in L.A. in support of the People's Climate March. Now that's commitment. For me personally, about halfway through the march, the historic meaning of this march began to hit home. The massive number of people involved, helped in no small part by the chants of the leader of the Amnesty International group, brought home the realization each one of us represented countless others who were with us in spirit. Those uncounted, unseen millions around the world who so desperately want humanity to make the same choices towards a renewable energy future, thereby averting, hopefully, a complete meltdown of the climate in which human civilization has flourished. The People's Climate March felt historic, giving this writer more hope enough power could eventually be manifested to begin to move mountains. This march was the crack in the egg, the pulling of a finger from a hole in the dike, a mass collective shout to our world leaders to get something done. Over 300,000 souls coming together, three times organize their expectations from out of the woodwork, from all classes and sectors of our society. Companion marches were held around the world, most notably in Berlin, Bogota, New Delhi, Istanbul, Johannesburg, Lagos, London, Melbourne, Paris, Rio de Janeiro, and Vienna. Seeing the hope in the faces of a few of these demonstrators from around the world brings reality to the idea we all want a safe world in which to live. 1 month after the People's Climate March, it is a little harder to see, but I think the reality will always be there. The first mass shout-out has happened, and there will be many more. As climate events unfold, the collective concern will deepen and focus, and there will be powerful movements begin to be unleashed. In one of my readings, I remember Al Gore referring to a tipping point for social awareness and action. Beyond that tipping point, the changes happening would be nonlinear. It will be these nonlinear changes which will begin the process of transformation. The overwhelming response of over 300,000 souls coming to the People's Climate March proves to me those powers leading to transformation are no longer so dormant. Let us not fool ourselves. The International Panel on Climate Change Fifth Assessment Draft Synthesis Report, that's a mouthful, leaked in late August 2014 indicated the following. All world efforts to reduce emissions have failed. Most of the greenhouse gas emissions since the Industrial Revolution have been released since 1970, with the years 2000 to 2010 the worst yet. At current emission rates, the world will surpass the red line threshold of 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit increase over pre-industrial average in 20 to 30 years. It's an extremely short period of time. World governments have historically agreed this red line must not be crossed. In conversation with some of the KC environmental community, this writer has the understanding the Kansas City Star had no coverage of the People's Climate March. A Communiversity global warming workshop this writer held on October 11, 2014, had only two enrollees, with neither one of them attending. At Governor Nixon's Clean Energy Commission hearing at Penn Valley Community College on October 22nd, as concerned citizens expressed their concern, fear, and sense of urgency over warming of our climate, it was obvious from their facial expressions a significant majority on the commission had disdain for what was being said or were so close they were not listening. The powerful effects of the fossil fuel disinformation campaign on the facts of climate change still holds sway in many areas of our society. The KC Star non-coverage of the People's Climate March speaks volumes. The merchandising of doubt by right-wing influenced media reaches all the way into the vast majority of Republicans in the Congress. These are dark times. Events such as the People's Climate March, along with a myriad of developments, large and small, mostly off the radar, give a hint of powerful dormant forces gathering more momentum in the collective human consciousness. These powerful dormant forces must be nurtured, and all of us with awareness of the climate crisis have our own disparate responsibilities to obey. This is Dave Mitchell with Global Warming Corner.
Thanks to Dave Mitchell for his commentary and update on the Global Warming Corner. He was talking about the People's Climate March, which was held in New York City and had over 300,000 marchers. I'm Mike Nichols, and you are listening to Radioactive Magazine on KKFI 90.1 FM, Kansas City's community radio. And in the studio today with me, I have Greg Schwartz and Doug Greer. And this segment, we're talking about the singing of God Bless America during the baseball games. And we're going to open up the phone lines for you guys to call in if you have any questions. Our phone number is 816-931-5534. So what do you have for us tonight, Greg?
Well, we're now less than a week past the end of a fabulous October for Kansas City, the Royals and their fans, both here in Kansas City and around the world. I suppose that the Royals' playoff run was no surprise to the players, but it sure was to me. To see our team scratch out that amazing wild card game, sweep the two series leading up to the World Series, and then to fall only two runs short of winning it all was a big letdown. That deflationary feeling is mollified only by a realization that before we won the World Series in 1985, we had knocked on the door several times in the years prior to that crown. It's an old saw, but I guess we have no other option than to wait till next year or so. Well, I'm not really here to talk about baseball per se. And as indicated earlier, we will be taking some calls if anyone has anything to say about this issue. Would appreciate it if you keep your questions and comments short and to the point. And once again, that number is 816-931-5534. And once I get done then with this little introduction, then we can take calls if you're interested. What I want to talk about is the seventh inning stretch. For me, and I'm old, the seventh inning stretch has always been about standing up and singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game, which is a rather lighthearted look at the game that all the fans could relate to. My only concern about the song is that it does have a slight commercial twist to it, in that it mentions buying Cracker Jacks, a branded version of caramel corn. Now, I'll admit that I'm not a day-to-day avid baseball fan, so I was rather dismayed while following the Royals in the playoffs to see and learn that the old standby song had been replaced by God Bless America. Don't get me wrong, I love this country, and some of my ancestors came to what is now this country as far back as the 1600s and fought in the Revolutionary War. We also have a long history here in Jackson County. The problem I have is that with that song is that I'm an atheistic humanist, and I get pretty tired of having God, an imaginary supernatural entity, thrown into every facet of American life. Baseball and all sports is supposed to be a diversion, a way to forget about your problems, a way for everyone in the city to come together in support of one cause. So why interject this issue into an otherwise harmonious and exciting event or series of events? And by this issue, I mean the issue of whether there's a God looking over us. Some of the details of how the song was handled is also of concern to me. First, in San Francisco, the stadium announcer asked everyone to rise and remove their hats. Though I rarely wear a hat, I would have no problem standing and removing my hat to honor the United States, but I do have a problem with anything that venerates what is a mythical entity, in my opinion. If I remained seated and refused to remove my hat, would the drunk next to me start a fight? What would stadium personnel do? Might I be ejected from the game? Second, I was deeply disturbed by the fact that in every instance, it appeared to me at least, during the World Series, the person singing God Bless America was a member of one of the armed forces in full military dress. I'm not prepared to discuss the constitutional issue of separation of state here, but it sure raises some questions for me, given the taxpayer dollars that have gone into the financing of the various stadiums and similar things. Aside from possible constitutional issues, I think the general issue of mixing religion with the military is one of extreme concern. Certainly, as we look around the world, the mixing of religious causes with military might is central to many of the world's problems today. For those watching the game on television, things got somewhat better because one of the cellular companies put together a montage of cameo scenes of American singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game. I'd like to mention, too, that importantly, one of the locals, from a local standpoint, one of the scenes was of the Heartland Men's Chorus singing. But that was a commercial, not an official Major League Baseball event, and of course, only the people watching on television saw that. When this country was founded, nearly every state was dominated by a different type of religion. So the founders of our country decided it was best to separate our governments from the various religions, and it seems best that that logic be applied to any activity designed to appeal to the general public. I know a lot of atheists, agnostics, and others questioning supernaturalism and religion, and they're all loyal Americans. Maybe they think things ought to be different, but in the end, we're all local, loyal Americans. If you search the internet, you will find a wide range of estimates as the number of free thinkers, anywhere from 6% of Americans being atheists to 33% being non-religious. Even 6% represents about 20 million persons, and Major League Baseball needs to take those persons into consideration. And so if anyone's interested in calling in and asking questions about that issue, they're welcome to, or we can go ahead and discuss it further here.
Well, I got a question for you, Greg.
Okay.
I mean, I'm an avid baseball fan, and I've been watching baseball, you know, all my life. And I don't remember God Bless America happening in the seventh inning, you know, growing up. I'm not exactly sure when did it start coming in where we switched to that from the, like you mentioned, the take me out to the ball game.
Well, as I understand it, it was probably around the time of the 9/11 attack, sometime right after that. And it's not necessarily every time, every place. Different venues have different practices, but they sure do have it at the playoff games. Do we have a call?
Yeah, we got a caller here. I'm gonna patch him through here.
Okay. If you're interested. About the origins of Take Me Out to the Ball Game, that song was written by a vaudeville star named Jack Norworth in 1908, who had never actually attended a baseball game at any point, at that point, is what I'm trying to say.
Are you on? Can you hear us?
Yes, I am. Thanks.
All right. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Yeah, JP calling from Shawnee.
Okay. What's your question for Greg?
Yeah, well, we don't have any TVs. We have a lot of computers in our house, about 5 computers, and we were just monitoring the score of the game on our computers. So I was very surprised by your radio show to hear that about God Bless America. And it's very disturbing, and I agree with your speaker there. I think it's very inappropriate. Also very disturbing, the military is kind of mixed into that. So in any event, thank you for your show. Those are my comments. Thank you.
Okay, well, we appreciate your comments.
Thanks.
Yeah, definitely.
And thanks for listening, too.
Oh, yeah. It's always great to have a listener come in and kind of, you know, throw in their opinion, too.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
I might point out that Another similar issue is the Pledge of Allegiance, of course, which contains the "under God" phrase, and a lot of the issues that relate to the singing of "God Bless America" actually are similar to the objections that I have to "under God" in the Pledge of Allegiance. Actually, I find that the Pledge of Allegiance is probably really not said very often or said very often, because I wonder if maybe people are not wanting to say that. And so I'm wondering if they took "under God" out, that the Pledge of Allegiance might be more likely to be stated. I know that I really feel uncomfortable being required to say "under God" when trying to pledge allegiance to the country, which I obviously do. I mean, I was born here and have all of my ancestors were living in Jackson County, and all of my grandparents, I should say, were living in Jackson County in 100 years ago. So, you know, this is my town. This is the place in my country. So.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not my God.
About taking off your hat, and like I said, I go to lots of games, and you know, it's you take off your hat to the Pledge of Allegiance or to the Star-Spangled Banner at the beginning of the game. But in the seventh inning, You know, when they do God Bless America, you actually, technically, you're not supposed to, or you don't have to take off your hat. That's not part of the tradition of it, I guess you should say. But I do notice that a lot of people do. And actually, there was a story where there was a fan, I believe it, it was in New York. I don't remember if it was, you know, the Mets or the Yankees. But there was a fan that was, they tried to eject him from the game, from the stadium, because he refused to take his hat off for God Bless America, and one of the ushers took offense to it.
Oh, really?
But it was one of those things that was just, you know, so strange, because you're not even supposed to, or you're not even, that's not even part of it, where you have to, you know, take it off. Like, when I'm there, I'd say maybe half the fans do. Like, they don't know, so they just take it off, like, hedging their bets. You know, it's like, well, it's better to be respectful and take off my hat than to have my hat on and supposed to be doing it. So I always thought that
was
kind of interesting.
Yeah, I don't think that the stadium announcer requested that in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
The reference I made earlier was to the stadium announcer in San Francisco.
Okay.
And so I guess I should say, hats off to the Kansas City Royals.
Oh, yeah. And when did this all start happening, like kind of the religion creeping in? You know, it's like I haven't really looked into the history of it. I mean, I've heard that, you know, like God, you know, like in God We Trust wasn't on the money when we first had it. And hang on, we got another caller.
Okay.
No, you go ahead.
Cool.
Okay. Well, the history of religion in the Constitution and in day-to-day activities has waxed and waned over the history of the United States. And originally, the Founding Fathers saw all the rigmarole going on about religion, and so they decided the best thing to do would be to just cut it out. But, of course, there's been a steady fight back from religious folks, and they keep trying to add things in that are religious. So we have a caller?
Yeah, hi.
John from Walton.
I had a little bit of interesting information about the Star Spangled Banner from a historical perspective. It was written by a guy named Francis Scott Keyes.
Uh-huh.
And he was a, Francis Scott Keyes was a student of Justice Taney, who wrote the infamous Dred Scott decision.
Okay, that's interesting.
And Francis Scott Keyes made a career out of putting abolitionists in prison. It's just, you know, kind of a paradox.
Auspicious.
I mean, you know, the way we treat the song now, and then what, you know, the real history of these people.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a contradiction.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's all I have to say.
Oh, no problem.
Okay.
Thanks for taking my call.
I don't really have anything to say about that. I was mostly talking about God Bless America. I don't have any objection to Star Spangled Banner. You know, unless you have an objection to a basic military stance of the country and that sort of thing.
Actually, that's kind of what disturbs me the most about encroachment of religion into our government. I mean, when it gets into the military. I don't know. Have you heard of the... this is Doug, by the way. Have you heard of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, founded by Mikey Weinstein?
Oh, I sure have.
Michael Weinstein?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, I read some of his emails about what's going on there and how sometimes officers will force their religion on people and all kinds of violations of the law within the chain of command and stuff like that. And it's I haven't been in the military, so, but there's some disturbing stuff going on there.
Right. You know, another interesting thing is the song "God Bless America" being sung at a World Series is kind of an interesting phenomenon. In fact, there's a certain amount of American hubris, I guess, involved in calling what is essentially an American game a World Series. And then we sing God Bless America at something that's supposed to be a World Series. It's kind of an interesting...
That is kind of an interesting take. I mean, I've never really thought about it, considering how international the teams are now.
Right.
You know, like the Royals, I mean, we have a lot of Dominican players. We have a Japanese player. Yeah. We had a Panamanian player. I mean, they're coming in from all over the world, you know, to play. And I kind of wonder, you know, what they think when they hear, you know, stuff like this. That might be kind of an interesting thing to broach.
Yeah. Well, what did they sing before the World Cup?
I don't know. It all depends on which teams are playing.
Yeah, you know,
when you play baseball in Canada, like a Toronto game, they do.
Yeah.
They do, you know, both the national anthems for Canada and for the United States.
Hmm.
I don't know if they do. I'm guessing they don't do God Bless America in Toronto.
Yeah.
You mentioned the players. Actually, we do have quite a few Japanese players. I don't know what their religion is, but, of course, it's possible that they're not at all Christian or Catholic or anything like that. Shinto is their national religion.
Right.
So, or at least that's my understanding. And so, you know, you wonder whether or not they've taken those people into consideration.
I mean, we did have an instance once this year during a Royals game where it was kind of, the fans were trying to do something nice. They were trying to, you know, show their support for Nori Aoki.
Uh-huh.
And they came in with the Japanese flag and, you know, put it out.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing was they had, like, it was from, like, an uncle or a grandfather's garage that they got it.
Oh.
So it was, you know, it wasn't the red circle on the white field. It was the ones with the, you know, the black hash marks on it. And it was the World War, you know, the World War One.
Oh, the Imperial flag.
Yeah,
right?
The Imperial flag. So Nori, I think Nori handled it really well. He just sort of, like, kind of put his head down and ignored it and, you know. I think he did make a little bit of a statement after the game, just kind of going, you know.
Yeah.
You know, just like, I'm glad the fans are behind me, but, you know, wrong flag.
You know,
through his translator.
I think the important point is that, you know, we're one country, we're one world, and so we shouldn't be emphasizing divisions between ourselves.
Right. Yeah, I mean, this is supposed to be a country with religious freedom and open to everybody, and it's not supposed to be a Christian country that just sort of, okay, we'll allow, you know, different viewpoints. It's supposed to be an open, honest, you know, anybody can do whatever they want and not have any sort of, at least that's how I see it, not have any religion one way or the other kind of stuff down their throat.
Do we have time for just a little plug?
Uh-huh. We're running close on low on time, but yeah, go ahead.
We're Doug and I are free thinkers, and we're activists, and there are several different, many different organizations here in Kansas City, and just a simple search of the internet would turn them up. I also operate it's just an amateur deal. I have a website called kcfreethought.org, and I try to list what's coming up and the different organizations that are available. So if anyone is interested, that's available.
All right. And do you have a website or anything that you want people to kind of check out?
Well, I wanted to kind of mention the KC Oasis Center. I've been going to that for the last month or so. They have events happening every Sunday at 11 a.m. And their website, you can get more information at kcoasis.org.
All right. Sounds good. Good note to end on. Thank you, guys. Thank you both for coming in, Greg Schwartz and Doug Greer. And you've been listening to Radioactive Radio. And stay tuned. Coming up next is Counterspin.